Welcome to the Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, August 30th, 2013. I am Jackie McIntosh, and I'm joined here in studio today by Alyssa Ray.
Hi.
Allison Cole.
Hello.
And Tim Aritz.
Hello.
Welcome. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and compassionate living radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. The program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at cooperadio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. So today is our dolphin show. September 1st marks the beginning of the dolphin drive hunting season in Taiji, Japan, where upwards of 20,000 dolphins are slaughtered every year. This Saturday is Japan Dolphins Day, which is an international day of action to raise awareness to the plight of dolphins in Taiji. We will be speaking in studio with Mel Tran, organizer of Vancouver's rally, to speak with us about this horrific practice, as well as the exciting, powerful rally that's taking place tomorrow. We are also accepting callers today. Do you have a question, concern, or anything else you'd like to discuss on air with the Animal Voices team? Please give us a call at 604-684-7561 a little bit later in the show, or feel free to tweet us as well on our Twitter account. We have a great show for you today, so please do stay tuned.
And the Twitter account, of course, is AnimalVoicesYVR.
Thanks, Tim.
So I just wanted to chat about the Dr. Will Tuttle event that I attended. Everyone else here was missing. You guys missed an amazing event. And as I was saying to everyone, it was a must-go-to event. Dr. Will Tuttle, he's the author of The World Peace Diet. And we had him on the show last week to do an interview. He's been on the show several times before. And I don't mind having him on repeatedly because he always has so much amazing and in-depth and profound wisdom to share with us and with the rest of the world. And I just think it's so important just to get his messages out there. The main premise of his book, The World Peace Diet, is just showing all the interconnections of how we human animals are interconnected with all the non-human animals on this planet and just how we're really all the same and how we need each other to survive and thrive. And it's just an amazing book. It's an amazing read. It's one of the best books I have ever read in my life. So there's my little plug for the World Peace Diet, which I don't mind doing over and over again. But so we had him on the show last week, and that was sort of prior to the event that we had here in Vancouver. He's never been in Vancouver before, and what he does is he and his wife, Madeline, they travel around in their RV across North America and make these stops among different places in the country and both countries and even around the world, actually. And right now they're sort of doing the Pacific Northwest circuit, which included a trip, a stay in Vancouver, and he had several events that were going on last week. And this one event that I went to and actually helped with, I was just helping out there. I actually announced the talk too, which was kind of cool because I got to speak to everyone about my favorite book. And anyways, yeah, so Dr. Will Tuttle came, and it was an event being run by Vancouver Meatless Meetup. It was all volunteer, and it was a fundraiser event. There was some funds being raised that went to Earth Save Canada. It was a beautiful event that actually started out with a raw foodist named Deborah Rossow, who I've actually met before at a potluck. I didn't realize it was she who'd be speaking at this event, and she has a vegan, raw vegan uncookbook out that she was talking about, and just talking about the raw diet and how it basically saved her life and reversed her health problems. So that was a great talk to begin with. And then we had a wonderful potluck. There were about 80 people there in total, which I think was a pretty good turnout. And also potluck, and there was food for purchase that went to the fundraiser. And then Dr. Will Tuttle came on, and he spoke about an hour and a half, because Dr. Will Tuttle speaks a lot, which is just amazing. So he actually said that his book is, it's an audiobook. It's on audiobook, and it's actually 13 and a half hours. So we were just getting sort of a little blip of what was mentioned in his book. And I have a really bad memory. I wasn't taking notes down. I was thinking while he was talking, like, wow, I should be writing notes, but I don't know why. And then I was asked to present the segment. So I asked my sister, actually, she has a really good memory, as to maybe just to point out some points that he had spoken about. You know, he made a lot of really interesting points just about how animals are treated and how people are affected by eating meat and so forth, and gave some stories about just how wonderful it is for him to be a vegan and thriving on a vegan diet. And I asked my sister to maybe just like bring up some points that she could, that particularly spoke to her as to what really stood out for her. So here's some points that I'm going to share with you. Let me know what your thoughts are on these. So did you know that more fish in the world is fed to farm animals than to human beings?
Wow.
No.
You didn't know that? I think I might have heard that before. It might have been in his book, actually. So that is one of the points that he brought up, which I thought was rather interesting.
So is that like fish meal, or do you know?
Yes. I don't think they're feeding big, huge salmon sockeyes to the cows, but he was talking about how cows eat fish. Yeah, and they're not meant to eat fish.
No.
They're ruminants, and they're meant to eat grass.
Is it the bycatch, I wonder? Or like, are... Because how much percent of fish caught is bycatch? Like
80%.
Non-target species.
Yeah. So what bycatch is when they're trawling with drift nets, is only 20%, one fifth of actually is of what is being caught is actually what is fed to people, or maybe put into the food system. I think bycatch is actually thrown out.
Yeah,
personally,
it's
seabirds, sea turtles, dolphins.
Why don't they just ground that up and feed it to
Good question. Let's ask the animal agriculture industry that the next time we have a chat with them.
Okay.
That would make sense. At least there wouldn't be any wastage. It's just really horrible.
Yeah.
Another point he brought up, which we have actually spoken on the show before, and I think it's important to bring up again, is he was talking about the correlation between domestic violence and slaughterhouse workers, and how it's such a common thing that when slaughterhouse workers are working at their job where they are constantly killing animals and slaughtering and murdering, they're completely desensitized to violence, and then they go home and they create violence in the home situation, and not only because they're desensitized, but because they don't have any other outlet to express their frustrations of their work. I think that's an important point to note, that really the animal agriculture industry, if you care about human beings, it certainly affects human beings. And one more point that I wanted to bring up that he mentioned, I don't think I knew this, is in the dairy industry, spent cows. So cows are used for about 3 to 4 to 5 years for their dairy. They're constantly being milked. They're constantly being kept impregnated. They are producing way more milk than they normally would in their normal life cycle. A normal life cycle for a cow would actually be about 20 to 25 years, just being able to live their normal life out. And in the dairy industry, he was saying 4 to 5 years. I've heard as low as 3 years. So 3 to 4 to 5 years. And because the milk is being leached out of them on a constant basis, they've got extreme osteoporosis. And he said that it's been reported that slaughterhouse workers have said that these spent cows that are on their way to slaughter, their bones are so brittle that you can just literally snap them in your hands inside the cow still.
And that's why there's so many down cows as well, because of the...
They can't walk.
The deformation, exactly.
That makes sense. So I just wanted to say, you know, if Dr. Will Tuttle is in your area, you could check out his web. He's got a few websites. I think he's got willtuttle.com, and he also has worldpeacediet.com, which seems to be a newer site. And I believe his speaking tour is always listed on there. And I think he was saying he was going to Europe as well. He goes everywhere. Please check for him to see if he's going to be in your area. This is a talk well worth attending. And it's not like he does the same talk every time. It wasn't scripted. He just stood up there. And not only that, he's a wonderful piano player and composer, and he played some of his original music for us. We play his music sometimes on the show. It's always this music he's playing is animal inspired. It's so beautiful.
I wanted to mention there's actually a meetup group coming up of vegan spirituality on meetup.com, a new Vancouver meetup group. and they're going to have a discussion group about the World Peace Diet, Will Tuttle's book, Reading and Discussion. It's going to be, the first meeting is Tuesday, September 17th at the Downtown Central Vancouver Library at 7 p.m.
Thank you so much for bringing that up, because that would just be, I think what they're actually going to be doing is reading in the meeting the book. So if you have a hard time getting into books, even though this really is, it's a page turner, but it's so in depth. It's like really, there's a lot to it. Attend the meetup, I think, and I think that's a great idea. Thanks for bringing that up.
Great.
Okay, and just to remind you, this is a call-in show, so please call in and let us know your comments. The number of the studio is 604-684-7561.
Drishti Point is a radio program featuring interviews about yoga, spirituality, and wellness. Our guests include yogis, authors, musicians, healers, and renowned spiritual teachers. Tune in Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. for your weekly dose of yoga wisdom and inspiration.
Hello, you're listening to Animal Voices. My name's Alyssa, and I have some events to share. First, let's start with the Vancouver Walk for Farm Animals. It's happening at the Vancouver Art Gallery October 5th. That's a Saturday, and it starts at 10 a.m., and there's going to be a yoga stretch at 10:30. Well, the actual walk starts at 11, but it's good to gather and get to know people and some community building. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some music performances as well. Sinead Sanders, and who's a great fan of Animal Voices, and the Carnival Band will be there as well. Again, last year they were there. They brought great energy to the walk, and it's just a 2.3-mile super easy walk. Definitely bring out your dogs and, you know, dress in costume. It's always fun to bring noisemakers. And this, of course, you might be wondering why it's happening. It's a fundraiser for Farm Sanctuary, which is a large farm animal rescue and advocacy organization based in the U.S. So Liberation BC is organizing this year's walk, and their goal for this year is $14,000. Right now, they're up to $3,605.
That's pretty good, considering it's over a month away.
Yeah, that is really exciting. So, and also, Animal Voices has made a fundraising page. You can support us through there. It's called Animal Voices Radio Show, and we're there.
Yeah, and you can either join our team when you register, or you can click on the donate now and just put Animal Voices on the search.
Does anyone have the URL for our fundraising page?
Well, it's too long to say.
Walk for Farm Animals, donate now, and then enter the...
You can search for Animal Voices or just the Vancouver.
So go to walkforfarmanimals.org, is it? Okay.
Yeah, perfect. And some other events coming up in September. First, Liberation BC's September Volunteer Night is Wednesday, September 11th, from 6 till 9. Join your fellow activists for an evening of fun and good conversation. They'll have crafts to prepare for the Walk for Farm Animals on October 5th, and they'll be making signs and banners. And as always, yummy vegan snacks will be provided, and that's at the Mount Pleasant Community Center in the Arts Room, and that's number 1 Kingsway at Main. So Wednesday, September 11th in the evening. And the day after, Liberation BC again is organizing a dairy project. It's their Dairy Project monthly meeting. So once a month, people are getting together to do research on the Canadian dairy industry and talk about what they've come up with and brainstorm about how to, promote an advocacy campaign or something against the dairy industry. I haven't actually been. I don't know what their plans are. But they're starting with laying down a foundation of research.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to know what they're up against and learn more about it to make sure that we're providing they're providing accurate information.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so that's Thursday, September 12th at 6 p.m. And it's at Nice Shoes, and they'll have snacks as well. So Nice Shoes is on Fraser Street near 20th. East 20th. And then the fourth annual Animal Advocacy Camp is, of course, coming up. And it's a little ways away, but...
We're a sponsor.
Awesome.
You will be a sponsor.
It is an attendee-led event, so if you want to present a workshop or host a discussion, or if you really want to hear someone speak there who has something to offer, it's time to knock on their door, give them a call, and tell them to prepare something, because this is all up to us. They do, though, have some keynote speakers, which I'll mention in a minute. So first, the dates, Saturday, March 22nd, and Sunday, March 23rd. So mark that on your calendar all weekend, both days. It's at the Vancouver Croatian Cultural Center on Commercial Drive. So it's a really a big venue, and there's going to be lots going on there. And the two confirmed speakers, are we allowed to say yet, Allison?
Oh, for sure, yeah. So, confirmed.
So it's confirmed that Joanne MacArthur will be there. Ooh. She's a globetrotting animal rights photographer whose project We Animals was featured in the new documentary The Ghosts in Our Machine. Also, Dylan Powell will be one of the keynote speakers. He is currently wrapped up in the Marineland, Marineland Animal Defense, which is in Niagara Falls. Marineland is there, and they're out there protesting regularly and have had thousands of people at their events. And right now, Dylan is just wrapped up in court proceedings and everything. And he's also very active in a lot of other things. He's an outstanding activist, and I look forward to hearing him talk.
Some great speakers.
Can I say a few words about the Animal Advocacy Camp? Because I'm helping to plan it. So registration will actually be open in November for the March event, and we do encourage people to register early. It's good to sort of get a feel of how many people are coming. We invite people actually from all over to attend. We're targeting all over Canada, south of us in the U.S. We actually had some people from Seattle attend last year, and certainly invite anyone who's interested in helping animals. You don't have to be like a diehard animal activist. In fact, this is a great place to go to sort of just wet your feet and just really learn about animal advocacy and meet a bunch of people and network. We have room for 300 people to attend this event. So I invite you to do that. Join our Facebook group, Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp, for more info.
Great. And in preparation for Japan Dolphin Day, which takes place on Saturday, August 31st, we have the organizer from Vancouver's event, Mel Tran, here with us to speak about the horrific slaughter of over 20,000 dolphins that take place every year from September to May in Taiji. So, first of all, welcome.
Hi, Mel.
Thanks for joining us.
For our listeners that might not know, can you tell me what International Japan Dolphins Day is all about?
Okay, so Japan Dolphins Day. Internationally, everyone is getting together on this specific day to basically say that they are not okay with the fact that dolphins are being killed and slaughtered every year in like the most brutal way. And it's a horrible thing that they're doing, and we want to tell the Japanese people that they're... Yes?
Just speak into the mic, please.
Okay. All right. We're trying to get the message across to the Japanese government that we internationally don't think that what they're doing is right.
Great. And I understand that a percentage of dolphins are kept alive during the dolphin hunt to be, you know, sold to the aquarium trade, such as the Vancouver Aquarium.
Exactly.
Can you tell me a bit more about that and like how they select these dolphins that they're going to keep alive for aquariums?
Well, it's actually very horrible because the trainers say that they care so much about these dolphins, yet when they come over, they basically just pick whichever dolphin seems to be the most healthy of the bunch. And once they pick the few that they consider to be healthy and well-equipped for their aquarium, the rest are killed right in front of the dolphins. And these dolphins are often far too stressed over the fact that their families have died in front of their eyes, that most of them actually end up dying anyways on their way back because of, number one, having been harmed, and two, being so stressed over the horror that they saw in front of them.
Of course, yeah, it's like a mass murder right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me, like, because it sounds like there's so much value to these people to be doing this brutal killing. Can you tell me, like, what kind of cost do these dolphins go for?
What do you mean?
Like, financially, how much money do they make off these dolphins?
I'm not quite sure, but they make a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot.
It's a multi-million dollar industry. That's why this is happening.
Okay. And how are the dolphins rounded up for this massive trap, slaughter, capture?
Oh, well, basically, they know their migration pattern because these dolphins have been going through these migration patterns for like thousands of years, right? And what they do is dolphins are very sensitive to sound. So these fishermen go onto motorboats and they make a line, an evenly placed line of motorboats blocking the path to wherever they're trying to go. And they take out stainless steel rods and hammers and they bang them really loud. And what ends up happening is that dolphins are very sensitive to sound, so they get very scared and they get so frightened and they get confused, so they frantically try to go the other way, and that's how they lead them into the cove. And in the cove, they are then fenced off and kept in there by fishing nets. And then after that, what they do is it's actually horrible. They take steel rods and they stab the dolphins until they die. And it's a long process. And often these dolphins don't die right away. They are surrounded by many dolphins, their family members just being stabbed as well.
Wow, that's really that's really tough to hear about.
Yeah. Actually, though, what's happening now is because it's being you can YouTube this on online. So now that more people are speaking against it, what they're doing is putting plastic covers over top, and what they're doing is actually trying to kill them by driving a spear right below their blowhole to. Because that's where their spine is, and the government says that that's humane because it's supposed to instantly kill dolphins, but we all know that that's not really the case at all.
Yeah. And what happens with the flesh of these dolphins? Because there's so many killed, but you don't really hear of people eating dolphin meat.
Oh yeah. Actually, people always say, "Oh, it's the Japanese people that are doing this," and most of the Japanese people don't even know about it. The meat is often sold as whale meat because in Japan, dolphin meat is actually considered less of an expensive commodity in comparison to whale meat. So what they do is they take the dolphin meat and they label it falsely under whale meat, and it's not good because what ends up happening is people end up eating things that they don't know what they're eating, and these dolphins are high on mercury in toxins, and actually too much mercury that it's considered unhealthy by the health world organization. I don't know how they get away with it.
I was just thinking, can you just imagine that happening here? Not that we eat meat, but can you imagine if you went into a store to buy some chicken and it was labeled as chicken and it was a different animal that you weren't expecting? I don't think it even really matters what other animal it was, but it's dishonest marketing of the product, you could say.
Yeah.
It's like if it was, I don't know, just some other animal and you thought you were eating a chicken, just to put it into terms that we might understand here.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. The mercury toxins, if they had passed that to cows or chickens in Japan and they had that same level of mercury, they would not allow it.
It would be outlawed.
Absolutely.
Well, that's an interesting dichotomy there that just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you were briefly touching on that the fishermen are kind of trying to hide this. How exactly do they go about hiding something like this from the public? Mm.
Well, before the public never really knew until the Cove documentary came out, because they would do it early in the morning, and they do it in the morning, and then there's a lot of blood that ends up seeping into the cove, and what they do is, because they do it in the morning, it goes away by the afternoon when tourists come in and see everything.
Well, not only that, but the cove in Taiji, where this is known to happen, it's all blocked off to the public. There's fences up there. You can't get over there. If you've seen the cove, you can see them basically scaling the fences to get in and sneaking in. And I've seen many pictures, like you cannot see in. But interestingly enough, the very first time I was ever aware of this whole travesty was years and years ago. I didn't even know what I was looking at. It was before any that this whole thing came out into the public with the cove. It was in National Geographic. I remember seeing pictures of just blood. Blood, 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 blood in the water, red water, and I remember it was Taiji. But I just didn't even really know what I was seeing. You see something so horrifying, you can't even believe it.
Yeah. And for International Japan Dolphins Day, what are some of the major areas involved in this? Can you tell me like how many countries are doing this, or approximately?
Yeah. Oh well, we have countries in all six continents.
Oh wow!
And we have 34 countries currently involved. I can't necessarily name all of them.
Yeah. Please list all 34 countries now.
There's 100 events happening as of now, like at the same time, and some of them: New Zealand, Japan itself, which is we're very happy Japan's involved. Canada, United States, Australia, just all, there's a lot of countries out there.
Great. That's great to hear.
So this means that the awareness is really getting out, and I really think it's due to the film The Cove that came out a few years ago and won Best Documentary, the Oscar for Best Documentary.
Okay, great. And are they all doing it, do you know if they're all doing it similar, going to the Japan consulate?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Great. So, so really, make it clear. And how many years has this event been taking place?
It's been several years. And it's actually a rather new thing, but I find that it's doing very well since the Cove, the documentary came out.
I was there last year. I was there for the whole 3 hours. I thought it was an amazingly attended event. We had a lot of people honking for us as they were driving past. I think it's on Georgia Street, right, downtown. And it was a very well-supported event. I just felt like just getting the word out there, because we were holding signs and banners and that people, the public, they knew what we were there for, because people are aware of this issue now because of the Cove documentary. And so we just got a lot of attention there. And I think that's the idea, right? Is just to get out the message.
Well, it's an Academy Award winning documentary.
I'm not sure if the Japanese consulate people were out. Actually, I'm sure they were aware that we were out there, but they weren't out there supporting us or anything, but we're getting a lot of support from the public. Mm-hmm. So I felt that it was a really worthwhile event, and there was entertainment. Carol Cox was there. I think she's going to be there again this year playing. We had a mermaid there. It's all good.
Great. And what can we expect in Vancouver? Like, what should people bring?
Well, we're trying to get them to all wear blue in support of the dolphins. Generally, a lot of people like to go in with posters and saying honk for the dolphins, or handing out brochures, letting people know the actual information involved with the movement that we're doing. And personally, I just think it's great that people are coming out. As long as people are coming out, that's fantastic.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mel, for joining us in studio today to speak about this important issue, as well as the global event taking place tomorrow. For more information on the Japan Dolphin Day event in Vancouver, you can search Vancouver Japan Dolphins Day on Facebook. The event will take place from noon to 3 p.m. outside the Vancouver Consulate of Japan at 1177 West Hastings Street.
Eyes are with eyes, and a vegan with vegan. I and I eat from the earth, I need the animals to give birth. No dead eyes, no fur, no feathers. When I tell people I don't eat meat, fish or dairy, then look for me strangely. Then I realize I eat a very wide variety. Listen to Maccabee. Yo, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell him, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell him, say that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell him, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell him, say that I'm a vegan. When me no eat no meat, no fish, no cheese, nah, no egg. Nothing with no foot, no eye, no wing, nah, no head. Nothing with no lip, no ears, no tongue, nah, no leg. Prefer fruit and vegetables instead. Me careful and me choose about what I'm eating. Me medicine, me food is me medicine. When me tell people that me not eat them, they think. They look at me and scratch them chin and start wondering. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me not eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me not eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. You want hear what me eat? Yo, I eat kalanu, aki, sweet potato, yam, banana, and tomato, cabbage, spinach, avocado, chocho, butter, bean, and cocoa, courgette, millet, plantain, rice, and peas, and pumpkin, mango, dates, and guava, chickpeas, and cassava, Brussels sprouts, and cauliflower, onion, fennel, and cucumber, plum, pear, and papaya, aubergine, and saya, lime, lentils, and quinoa, oatmeal, bread, and oatmeal flour, watercress, and okra, tofu, and sweet pepper, couscous, and carrot, broccoli, and coconut, peaches, apples, apricot, red fruit, jackfruit, sour, sap, pistachios, the shoes, and almonds, walnut, peanut, also pecan, sesame seeds, some flour, lemon, orange, pineapple and melon, bogo, wheat and garlic, kiwi, corn and turnip, pacho and pomegranate, hijiki and rocket, berries, cherries and strawberries, beetroot, beetroot and celery. You see them is not necessary. We tell them, say, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan. Hey, look how me big and me say, look how me strong. Some people can't believe that me a vegetarian. If you want a healthy body, check the real Rasta man. Cause Rasta man will tell you about the right nutrition. Me get me calcium, me sodium, me get potassium. Me get me zinc, me get me iron and me magnesium. Instead of yam the fish, me yam what the fish yam. Like the kelp and Irish monster growing at the ocean. Me get me proteins and me minerals, me get me calories. The vitamins A, the B, the C, the D, the E, the F, the G. Essential fatty acid like the omega 3. Me get me fiber and me carbohydrates in my body. Don't forget your water, drink a few glasses a day. The toxins in your body, just flush them away. Some of the things you eat, stop in your body and decay. When it come to food, I don't play. We tell them, say, how when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat, them I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say, me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat, them I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say, that I'm a vegan. A lot of people would have stopped eating the meat if they had to kill the animal before they could have eat. Look on the way the animal then get treated. Unsanitary condition where some of them keep it. We're supposed to eat the meat, we would have sharp teeth. You wouldn't need a knife and a fork, you know, see. You can't eat it raw, you have to cook it complete. And put on vegetable seasoning to make it taste sweet. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan, man. How when me eat them, I wonder when me eat. When me tell them, say me no eat no fish, nah, no meat now. How when me eat them, I wonder when me yum. When me tell them, say that I'm a vegan. It's up to you. You can eat what you want to. You can be a vegetarian and be healthy too. There's a lot of choice around, many food around you. But just remember, some more I forget to tell you. The nectarines and tangerines and clementines and guanabana.
That is What Me Eat from Maccabee, with lots of awesome suggestions of things you can eat. You're listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver Co-op Radio CFO 100.5 FM, broadcasting live from the downtown east side in Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish territories. And now I believe we have some news for you.
Yeah, and reminding people to give us a call for the last half of the show, 604-684-7561. We're here in the studio. We will put you on the air if you want to say anything about animal rights, about veganism, or comments about our show, what you've heard today or what you've heard on past shows. We just really like to hear from people. So I'll kick it off with something, an article in The Province today, actually. Thanks, Jenny Rempel, for the heads up on Facebook. So there's an article called Farmers Need to Show Public the Good Stuff, says animal rights activist. And which animal rights activist is the province talking about? Oh, Dr. Temple Grandin. She was urging the Fraser Valley Farms today, which is the area around Vancouver suburbs in the valley, to be transparent about how they treat their animals. The Colorado State University professor, known for overcoming personal struggles with autism and for improving standards in slaughterhouses and the food animal industry, made the remark in a lecture on Thursday in Abbotsford. So basically, she's encouraging farms to show the good stuff to the public, because animal rights, real animal rights activists, which Dr. Temple Grandin absolutely is not, are out there with the undercover videos showing the public what's going on, and it's shocking people, and they're eating less animal products because of it. And she's saying, in order to counteract that, we need to just show what's going on and just make the farms public friendly. And
what good stuff
can they show? I'm curious.
Well, that's the thing, is she advocates for the truth, which I can respect that, though. She's advocating for consumers to know what they're purchasing and what they're putting into themselves. So I do respect that. That's definitely an animal welfare form of activism, not animal rights. There is a difference. Yeah. But still, I would like to actually write a comment on that article if I can, just to explain the difference, if that's allowed. But
yeah, I think, I mean, it's an attention-grabbing title. In the actual article itself, they called her an animal welfare advocate, okay, which is more true with you. So yeah, she believes
that farmers
need to know how animals are feeling in order to sort of reduce their fear, you know, before they're slaughtered or anyway. So that's just one article that came up today. Another thing that came out this week in Canadian animal news, the Fur Bear Defenders published an article, yes, that Ontario, the province of Ontario, wants to teach kids to kill. And so with the support of the Ontario government, children ages 12 to 15 will be taught how to kill wildlife by two hunting and trapping lobby groups.
What? So, I was like in sync.
Yeah, I'll just let that sink for a minute. Yeah, okay. In a press statement issued Wednesday, the Ontario Federation of Hunters and Anglers and the Ontario Fur Managers Federation congratulated the Ontario Ministry of Natural Resources on the introduction of a youth trapping program. And here's the quote. Trapping is considered an activity of significant historical, social, and cultural and economic value in Ontario for centuries, and one that results in economic benefit to the communities and individuals, said the Minister of Natural Resources, David Orazietti, in the statement. Ontario trappers have worked tirelessly for many years towards a program like this, which will guide youth to be safe and responsible trappers.
And
next up, they have a youth group putting Japanese people in internment camps, because that's Canadian history.
You know what? There's already a program that I'm aware of, because my friend has posted on Facebook that she's going to put her daughter into this. It's a program to teach kids how to hunt and basically to show respect and know how to use weapons correctly. And that her daughter's about 12 years old. My goodness. But I it's when I see things like that on Facebook, I just don't want to I don't want to scream my thoughts about that, because I don't, you know, I try not to be too negative. Although, you know, we were really good friends a long time ago. I don't think she would defriend me or anything, but I just find that it already does exist.
And shouldn't we be teaching our kids compassion?
Oh, you think? You think, Jackie?
Because I see all these images on Facebook and various things or whatever of these kids with the dead body of an animal with their parents. They look the parents look so proud, and the kids, their faces just look, most of the time, look kind of shocked, confused. And it's, I don't know why we're trying to just
parents can teach their kids whatever they want, and
they can.
You know, I think it's really a matter of education starting from when you're a child, because these parents haven't had that education, so they're growing up in a different mindset and then passing that on to their children. So but I do believe that people are inherently compassionate from when they're born, unless they're a psychopath. But, and I do believe that with, you know, when others intervene and sort of change that path, that's when you grow up with kids. I have a friend who's got, her husband's a hunter too, and they pose with pictures on Facebook with like dead deer, like, yay, look at, I'm holding antlers. So there you go.
There's that. There's the issue. You mentioned the hunting club. I mean, that's kind of a private thing, and parents can make that decision. This is actually sponsored by the Ontario government, and it's going to be offered in schools, okay? And, so why are our tax dollars supporting this, the fur bear defenders ask, and why are we supporting an activity that's wholly dependent on the suffering of innocent wild animals, of course, but what about the history, too? The trapping has led to the extinction of sea mink. It nearly destroyed beaver populations across the continent. It's ripped apart ecosystems, and these things are all being ignored. And they're asking the Minister of Natural Resources if he's ever held a dying animal in his arms, and if he sat with families who've lost dogs or cats due to trapping devices. So what they, the furbearerdefenders.com, go there. If you are an Ontario resident and you want to contact your local member of a political parliament. And that's about it for that. And then
I have something else, just fur bearers in the news. They've been really busy this week. Leslie Fox, my friend, she was on the news this week a couple nights ago to talk about calling geese in, I think it was in Assoyus. I don't know if either of you caught that, but apparently they want to call Canada geese in Assoyus because they make a mess and they're noisy. And the question,
do people.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, the question put out there was, and I think this was on CTV News a couple nights ago, and I totally wanted to do it, but I was so busy that night and I forgot about it. They had a poll and they were asking people to basically comment on their poll. Are you for culling wildlife if they get in the way, or other options? And Leslie was there on television to say, you know, this shouldn't even be an option. Work with wildlife, right? Like, what's why? I just don't understand that mindset of where, yes, these are like they're bothering us, just like some humans do. Some humans cause mayhem and throw garbage around in that. We don't call them, but again, it's a whole different mindset.
Personally, I have to say I've been bothered more by humans usually than by different animal species that are considered pests. So
I would have to concur with that.
And speaking of the devastating effects of hunting, the CBC reported that India banned shark finning, which is, as we all know, the really horrible practice of catching shark, cutting their fins off, and throwing them back in the water where they die a really horrible death. And these shark fins are eaten in Chinese shark fin soup, where, according to many people who have tried it, they don't even taste of anything. It's just a pure status thing, and it's a really, really awful practice. Anyways, India has banned the hunt of sharks solely for the fins, so they're still, people are still allowed to hunt sharks, which is a bad thing, but they have to catch the whole shark, because there are many, like in Indian waters, there are like about 12 different shark species, and many of them are endangered, and if fishermen only have their fins, it's not possible to distinguish which shark these fins are coming from. So now, if fishermen are caught with fins on board without the shark, they can face up to 7 years imprisonment for hunting an endangered species, which I think is a really, really good step in the right direction. Still, if you look at the numbers, in 2010, Indian fishermen exported $11.3 million worth in shark fins to China. And last year, it was only $4.8 million, even though the demand is still high. So there was simply no more shark to export. So you really see the numbers are going rapidly down. It's really insane, within like 2 years difference, such a huge difference. And people are still hunting for shark, and Chinese people are still eating shark. So, Yeah, it's a step in the right direction, but there's still a lot to do. Everybody should ban shark fin soup. Everybody should go to the protest at the restaurants who serve these, like the one on
Main. Tonight, 6:30 to 8:30, Sun Suiwa restaurant on Main Street.
I always wonder about that. I mean, people are, there's so much support. People are going by honking. Like, people can really get on board with shark fin soup banning because most people, you know, in the West don't eat that. And it's kind of just a Chinese thing. So there's a bit of, like, racism there to be aware of, like, pointing the finger. Like, what are we doing that's just as bad? No,
many things.
Yeah.
What about all the other animals that we are,
I guess, yeah, and people can, I guess, more easily get behind, like, endangered species issues than other animals.
I think if any Western restaurants here would serve endangered species on their menu, it would be easy to get as much support from people. I don't think it's a racial issue. Yeah. I mean, certainly people still have the cognitive dissonance that they don't distinguish between, or that they, like, don't see the similarity between, like, these endangered species and the cows and chicken that they eat every day. Mm-hmm. But still, I think it's too easy to hide beneath the, like, cultural screen and being like, oh, this is our practice that we have been doing forever, because that's the same thing as, like, the people in Ontario are doing with the hunters saying, oh, this is our cultural heritage. It's still wrong. It doesn't matter who's doing it.
And why is it, like, it's just, if this has been going on for so long, it seems like suddenly there's this awareness of it. And it's like, at the brink of, like, when you need to really do something, when you're finding out about this.
Any other news?
I have a couple things, if you don't. In terms of banning things, in our little local Metro Vancouver, Delta and Burnaby here, our neighbors, have already passed bylaws banning the tethering of dogs in yards. And Surrey councillors are now pushing the province to get tough on people, and they want this to be provincial. So the BCSPCA is, they say they appreciate the gesture, but they need the language to be really clear, and they want it to be really go far and totally outlaw any tethering. That's exciting, just kind of movement, I guess. There are 15 states in the U.S. that have totally banned or regulated chaining, and many other communities, a huge, huge list. So that's growing. And one other little thing. Oh, just in environmental news, this past week, a satellite image of a massive waste lagoon adjacent to commercial feedlot in Texas made headlines on Reddit and the Huffington Post and a whole bunch more sites, and just, you know, all over Facebook and everywhere. It looks like a huge pool of blood because of the red algae, and it's really disturbing. And yeah, it's a great, like, reminder to people of the fact that animal agriculture.
What are these waste lagoons, Alyssa? I think most people probably don't know.
Well, it's there's, you know, commercial feedlots where they have thousands and thousands of cows or pigs,
and they defecate. And
they sure do a whole lot.
What happens to it?
They make kind of pool. I guess they line it with something, and it all just
they line it with some plastic.
I guess, yeah. And I don't know what the rules are, but then I saw on Veg News online today, they say that the U.S. Federal Environmental Protection Agency faces a lawsuit for getting rid of a previous statute that holds factory farms accountable for waste. So animal welfare and environmental activist groups, including the Center for Food Safety, Environmental Integrity Project, Food and Water Watch, and the Humane Society of the U.S. are pressing charges against the EPA for its dismissal of a law that would allow the EPA to gather specific data on factory farms. And that information is just crucial. It tells how many animals are there, geographic location, and they need to, you know, enforce environmental regulations, but the EPA is backing off of controlling that at all and holding businesses accountable.
If people want to learn more about these issues and lagoons and the politics involved, I would recommend reading Eleanor Boyle's book, High Stakes. It's all about this. We interviewed her earlier this year for our Earth Day show, and I recommend checking that out.
Great. And since Japan Dolphins Day is tomorrow, Allison, you had something to share about your experience with dolphins.
Yeah, it's World Japan Dolphins Day tomorrow, as we've been talking about on the show. It happens every year around this time of the year, August 31st. And I just wanted to share my experiences with dolphins, swimming them both in the wild and in captivity. I have done both, I am ashamed to say. And I just wanted to share my story so that other people can maybe relate and let's have a chat about this. So yeah, years ago, before I had seen the cove, before I was really aware of anything, and I can really relate to people, I think, here at Animal Voices, being amongst people who sort of are really aware of animal issues, it's on the forefront of our minds all the time, because we know the issues, because that's our job. We research these issues, we advocate for animals all the time, and we need to know what's happening. But you know, there's always times where you don't know these things. And back years ago, I went swimming with dolphins in captivity. I absolutely love dolphins. I didn't really understand what I was doing. I know that sounds really lame, right? But hey, we've all been there before with eating meat, so I think it's relatable, right? It's like, I used to eat meat and I didn't know it was an animal. I swam with dolphins in some kind of a, what would you call it, like a SeaWorld type place in the Dominican Republic, and it was an amazing experience. I would never do it again, and I feel really bad about it. However, years after that, a few years after that, the cove came out, and I learned about all the issues. Of course, would never go back to doing that, but I still wanted to have these experiences with dolphins. And what I have done a couple times now when I've been to Hawaii is gone out swimming with dolphins with a business, like a company that does these excursions, and I feel they are very respectful to the dolphins. They don't interfere. Like, you take a boat out basically, and you don't you don't chase the dolphins. Sometimes you're not even really that close to them. I know, Jackie, you've done a similar.
I did something similar, yeah. And it was more just, it wasn't really.
Was it in Hawaii?
It was in Hawaii, but it wasn't really swimming with them. It was more observing the pods underwater, which was kind of cool.
They
observing sea turtles and all the sea life, and just being involved kind of in the whole.
They advertise it as swimming with dolphins, and you're like, wow, I'm going to get to like pet these dolphins in the ocean. And they show pictures of people that are really close to them. Mm-hmm. But I've done it twice now, and in my experience, it's more like observing and sort of being around them. And you're in the boat, and they'll swim by, and you'll see them, and then you'll all jump in the water, and they may or may not come to you. It depends if the dolphins are having a particularly extroverted day or not. Mm-hmm. And what we have learned actually is in the daytime, they're actually sleeping when they're swimming around. So that kind of is strange to me, is how can they interact with you if they're sleeping? But I guess that's how dolphins sleep, is they're constantly swimming around. They can't stop moving. We interacted with spinner dolphins in Hawaii. Maybe it was the same with you in Oahu. And these are beautiful dolphins that they're known for their acrobatics of spinning in the air. And I was doing some research as to why they might do this, and yes, it's partially to get parasites off them, but also I was doing research, and apparently one website that I looked at said it seems to be an emotional exclamation point, their spin in the air, to whatever action happened just before the spin. And this could mean something like they're saying, I'm really happy that just happened, or listen to me now, or I am a spinner dolphin, therefore I spin. And it's just like amazing to be in this environment where you're just observing these amazing animals doing their own natural behaviors. And they may or may not be totally beside you or not, but they're there and you can see them.
Yeah, I much prefer, like, you know, of course, seeing animals, you know, in the wild. And I definitely advocate for people, don't go to SeaWorld, don't go to a zoo, go in the wild and actually experience them. Like, you're not going to get up close.
Not everyone can do that. It's expensive.
But you can also watch documentaries.
I was just going to say that.
Yesterday was the last day that Blackfish was screening at the Rio here in Vancouver. It's such an amazing movie. We saw it a week ago, Alyssa and I, in a packed theater, and I was really impressed how moved the people were after the movie. You could really see, like, everybody came out and was talking about it and was deeply impacted. So yesterday I actually wanted to go out there and talk to a few people, and I got a microphone and a recorder and went out there to the late night screening. And just as I was there, the thunderstorm started and everybody was huddling away. So I didn't really get any comment from anybody. But I heard some guy saying, just as he went out of the theater, he said, "It's official now. I'm never going to the aquarium again." And I think that's really good and really important. And to see that, like, really the orcas and the belugas and the dolphin, and they're all the same. And so we shouldn't support any of that.
Yeah. And in the making rounds in a popular YouTube video of whales off the coast of Galliano Island, about 60 whales were going through in the inlet there. And that was amazing. So yeah, that's the way to see these beings in
Absolutely.
The wild.
The way they're behaving naturally.
You have been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us on next week's show. It's going to be a great show to be announced. We here at Animal Voices modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. Please like us on there. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or on email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And you can also check out our website, animalvoices.org, where you can download the podcasts of our shows from. So I just want to we're closing with a song here for the dolphins. It's called Oceana by Carol Cox. Carol is a local Vancouver musician. She's a singer and songwriter. She's going to be at the World Japan Dolphins Day demo in Vancouver tomorrow, performing some of her music. She did it last year and it was really awesome to see her play. This is a brand new song that she's just written, and she's been inspired by the dolphins to write this song. Stay tuned now for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
Not a curse of vengeance, no, but with signs of loving war. How long can this remain? A regime of hurt and pain? Are we to continue on this path that went so wrong? So wrong. Such great.